Anyhow, I'd like to start today's message by reading three groups of verses. And as we read these, try to determine what, if anything, links these verses together. The title of my message today is Free Will, which will give you a hint about what to look for. Notice I said free will, not as some other unnamed person thought, Free Willy. So don't look for any kind of whale themes in these verses. If you'd like to, you could turn over to Numbers 20. Numbers 20, and we're going to read verses 7 through 12. Numbers 20, verse 7. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals." Verse 9, so Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded. So, first step, Moses does what he's commanded. In verse 10, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear ye rebels." So, you know, whatever's coming after this probably is not going to be very good. "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. So what happens next? Verse 12, then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, quote, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." So Moses disobeyed. He did something different from what he was commanded to do. So keep this in mind as we go through this. skipping down to verses 23 and 24. Numbers 20, verse 23. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor by the border of the land of Edom, saying, "Aaron shall be gathered to his people, for he shall not enter the land which I have given to the children of Israel, because you rebelled against my words at the waters of Meribah." So this is kind of tragic and also fascinating. So Moses is angry, and he calls people rebels. And as a result, God is angry with Moses and calls him a rebel. Because Moses doesn't obey, he doesn't get to go into the promised land. And as we see, this is no minor thing to Moses. If you look at Deuteronomy 3, verses 23 through 26, Moses recounts these events to the Israelites. Excuse me, Deuteronomy 3, verse 23. "Then I pleaded with the Lord at that time, saying, 'O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand, for what God is there in heaven or earth who can do anything like your works and your mighty deeds?'" Verse 25, "I pray." So Moses is pleading and praying. "Let me cross the river and see the good land beyond the Jordan, those pleasant mountains and Lebanon." Verse 26, "But, but the Lord was angry with me on your account and would not listen to me. So the Lord said to me, 'Enough of that. Speak no more to me of this matter.'" So Moses disobeys and is disallowed from entering the land that he longs for. For the second group of verses, if you want to, you could turn to Deuteronomy 4. Excuse me. Deuteronomy 4, verse 1 through 6. And again, think about what do these verses have in common with the ones we just read. Deuteronomy 4, verse 1. "Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and judgments which I teach you." So why are they taught them? Quote, "To observe." So why observe them? Quote, "That you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord your God of your fathers is giving you. So Moses says there's something they must do if they want to live. Verse 2, you shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take away from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. So this should remind us of Revelation 22, verse 18 through 19, which I'll read for you. Revelation 22, verse 18, for I testify to everyone who hears the words of this prophecy of this book, if anyone adds to these words, God will add to him the plagues that are written in this book. And if anyone takes away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part from the book of life, from the holy city, and from the things which are written in this book. So, in other words, don't mess with God's commandments. And, of course, don't ignore them. God says, if you do that, you won't live and possess the promised land, either the physical or the eternal. So, as we go through, keep this word, if, in mind. Deuteronomy 4, verse 5. Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. So Moses, of all people, who is not going to enter that promised land, knows how important it is to obey. And that's what he's conveying to the Israelites. So do you see anything in common between the first group of verses and these groups, this group of verses? Before you answer, let's read a third and final set. Deuteronomy 30, verses 9 through 14. Deuteronomy 30, verse 9, breaking into the thought a bit. The Lord your God will make you abound in all the work of your hand, in the fruit of your body, in the increase of your livestock, and in the produce of your land for good. For the Lord will again rejoice over you for good as he rejoiced over your fathers. Verse 30, if you obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes which are written in the book of the law, and if you turn to the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul. Verse 11, for this commandment which I command you today is not too mysterious for you, nor is it far off. It is not in heaven that you should say, who will ascend into the heaven for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it. Nor is it in the sea beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it. Verse 14, but the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may do it. And here is the critical verse that ties all of these verses together. Deuteronomy 30, verse 15. Deuteronomy 30, verse 15. See, I've set before you today life and good, death and evil. And if you skip to verse 19, Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. I call heaven and earth as witness today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose. So, would you believe that this word, choose, is one of the most controversial words in all of science, in all of philosophy, in all of religion, in all of the law? Something I didn't know until last night is it caused a vicious debate between Martin Luther and Erasmus. In fact, Martin Luther's the book he's most proud of was a book where he rips Erasmus apart for his views on this word. It caused heated debate between Albert Einstein and Max Born, one of the fathers of quantum physics. This word is the subject of an incredibly heated debate to this day. It impacts virtually every aspect of our lives. It impacts government, family, you name it. It is the link. So what is the link between these three groups of verses? Quite simply, the link is choice. So what we read in the first group is Moses has a choice. He's told to speak to the rock, and he chooses to strike it. The Israelites in Deuteronomy 4 are told to listen and obey, told not to add to God's commandments or take away from them, which implies choice. It implies that it was possible for them to do it. And finally, in the third group of verses, the idea of choice is explicit. What's more, Moses drives a point home that it's something the Israelites can do. Deuteronomy 30, verse 11. For this commandment which I command you today is not too mysterious, nor is it afar off. Verse 14, but the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may do it. So another word for choice in the title of today's message is free will. Free will can be defined simply as the ability to choose one's actions or thoughts. And as simple and intuitive as that idea may be to us, that we have the ability to choose whether to walk on the right side of the street or the left side, whether to wear a red tie or a yellow tie, eat pizza or hamburgers, or on a more serious note, whether to love others, to care for others, or whether to kill others. That simple, intuitive idea is contrary to what the vast majority of scientists believe. There are many different versions and nuances to this, but at the end of the day, the inescapable conclusion that most scientists, physicists, psychologists, neurobiologists have reached is that there is no such thing as choice. It is an illusion. And the idea that the Bible teaches choice is yet another example that it's completely a myth. So they say. And I think to some extent you need to research this yourself to really get a sense of how pervasive, insidious, it's just everywhere. It underlies, it's so taken for granted it's not even spoken, but it underlies so much of what we see in the world today. This position, generally defined, is called determinism. Wikipedia gives the following definition. Determinism is the view that every event, including human cognition, behavior, decision, and action, is causally determined by an unbroken chain of prior occurrences. So, in other words, everything that has happened was automatically caused by the thing that happened before it. So the implication is that if the Big Bang were the first event, everything that happened, every event, human thought, action, feelings, were all predetermined by the physics of the Big Bang. Wikipedia continues, determinists believe the universe is fully governed by causal laws resulting in only one possible state at any point in time. So in other words, the way things are is the only way they could be. There was no choice involved in how things are. Another site defines determinism as follows. The doctrine that all actions are determined by the current state and immutable laws of the universe with no possibility of choice. So, as ridiculous as this may sound, consider that it is what the most intelligent, the most celebrated, and the most successful scientists in the world believe. This is not an obscure point of view. This is the mainstream point of view. One example is Francis Crick. I don't know if you know the name. He's a co-discoverer of DNA. He wrote a book entitled The Astonishing Hypothesis. What is the astonishing hypothesis? Crick says that it is, quote, that you, your joys, your sorrows, your memories, and your ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are, in fact, no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules. So, in other words, there is no you in you. There is no spirit in man, as Ecclesiastes claims, no creator who breathes life into man, as Genesis claims, and no choice, as the verses we read claim. You and I suffer under a delusion of free will, of being able to make choices, but that delusion itself is the result of the physical properties of nerve cells and molecules. In other words, Crick is saying you and I are simply a bag of chemicals governed by the laws of nature. This, again, is the inescapable conclusion of a world without spirit and a world without God. It is also the conclusion that Stephen Hawking, the world-famous scientist, came to. Excuse me. To quote Stephen Hawking, quote, "The human race is just a chemical scum on a moderate-sized planet orbiting around a very average star in the outer suburbs among 100 billion galaxies. We are so insignificant that I can't believe the world, universe, the whole universe exists for our benefit." That would be like saying, you would disappear if I closed my eyes. So one has to wonder if Hawking had named his book, Humans Are Just Chemical Scum, instead of The Grand Design, right? Would anybody buy the book? So I also have to confess, incidentally, when he says to the interviewer, if I close my eyes, you'll disappear, I have absolutely no idea what that means. It makes no sense to me. One sensible thing Hawkins did say was this. Quote, "I am discounting reports of UFOs. Why would they appear only to cranks and weirdos?" So I thought that was, he said something sensible. But to the point of this message, Hawking's view of humans may make him sound to us like he's a crank or he's a weirdo. But he's a best-selling author. He has a massive audience. And just as another example, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which to me is just astonishing because he doesn't believe in freedom. He doesn't believe in choice. The Presidential Medal of Freedom is the highest civilian honor in the United States that recognizes individuals who have made, quote, "an especially meritorious contribution to the security or national interest of the United States, world peace, cultural, or other significant public or private endeavors." So this celebrated, educated, respected man's opinion is, quote, "the human race is just a chemical scum." So in a moment, I'll go into why that all matters. But consider one final example. And this again shows that this idea that you and I do not have free will, that choice, the choice Moses made in Numbers 20, that the Israelites were told to make in Deuteronomy 4, and the choice of life and death that the Israelites were explicitly told to make, that these choices are delusions, that all things are predetermined, predestined, and that is a fundamental belief of science for a very long time. Remember the definition of determinism. Determinism is the view that every event, including human cognition, behavior, decision, and action, is causally determined by things that happened before it. And there is no possibility of choice. And the impact of this point of view is subtle and powerful, which may remind us of the description of Satan himself. It is a fundamental view of the world's most influential people, by the discoverer of the structure of DNA, the world's Stephen Hawking, who's regarded as the world's smartest man living, and by what many people think of as the smartest man who ever lived, Albert Einstein. So according to a biography on Einstein, he was once asked by a girl in the sixth grade of a Sunday school, "Do scientists pray?" So Einstein took the question seriously and replied, quote, "Scientific research is based on the idea that everything that takes place is determined by laws of nature, and this holds for the actions of people," he explained to the sixth grader, probably a little overwhelmed by the response. But let that sink into your mind. This is Albert Einstein. In other words, he's saying that to tell somebody to obey a commandment is useless. He will obey. he won't obey based on genetics, the molecules in his body, and the position of the moon. Einstein continues, quote, for this reason, a scientist will hardly be inclined to believe that events could be influenced by prayer, i.e., by a wish addressed to supernatural beings. Regarding the title of today's message, Free Will and the Jewish Religion, Einstein said the following, quote, I am a determinist. I do not believe in free will. Jews believe in free will. They believe man shapes his own life. I reject that doctrine. So Max Born's wife, who I mentioned before, was incensed at this idea, and she argued with Einstein on it. And she didn't believe that he could possibly believe this. So she said to Einstein, quote, nor am I able to imagine that you believe, as Max has told me, that your, quote, complete rule of law means everything is predetermined. For example, whether I am going to have my child inoculated. And she understood the implications, as she pointed out, if Einstein's right, it means the end of all morality and all ethics. And I think for us, maybe in particular, it's hard to get this idea that we don't have choice, hard to get our mind around it. One of the things that inspired me for this message is when we were in the feast in North Wales, we had some discussions on evolution with some folks that aren't in the church. We go to the bookstore to buy them a book on some of the counter arguments for evolution. And if you go in the States, you know, there's in the science section, religion section, there's lots of books about this. So guess how many there are in North Wales? Zero. So you go to the science section, and you have Dawkins and Hawkins and Darwin. You have all these books and not a single book that contradicts that view. In the religious section, you have a couple books on the Pope. And every other book is a book denouncing religion. So that's the religion section. And frankly, it was really kind of creepy. I mean, to be in a place where God has been driven so thoroughly from society. The book I picked up was entitled 13 Things That Don't Make Sense, and Free Will was one of those. And it's clear, as I've shown, the majority of the science believe as Crick and Hawking and Einstein believe. You and I are a bag of chemicals without choice. Every single thing we think, feel, and do is completely controlled by the laws of physics. Predetermined, predestined, and you and I are complete slaves to this fact. So they say. So if you carry this to its logical conclusion, it has some weird implications. It means in the Big Bang, not only was man predestined to evolve, but Chia Pets, Ginsu Knives, Bell Bottoms, everything in the universe was predetermined in the Big Bang. Who you're going to marry, the way you combed your hair, if you have hair, the name your parents gave you, whether or not you like cheese, if you have bad breath today, all of these things were predetermined. It's not Mr. Harris's fault that he thought the title of my message was Free Willy. The Big Bang is at fault. The mainstream scientific view means the fact that you're sitting here is not a choice. It was all, again, predetermined in the Big Bang. You think you chose it, but you didn't. If you're falling asleep right now because my message bores you, no problem. It's the Big Bang's fault. Again, this is what brilliant people like Einstein believe that science shows them. In a statement to Spinoza Society in 1932, Einstein clarified this. He said, human beings in their thinking, feeling, and acting are not free, but are causally bound as the stars in their motions. So we have no more choice about what we think and do and say than the stars have a choice about how they tumble around in the universe. If we did have free will, if we did have choice, what would it imply? It would imply there is something more to you than the physical. It would imply that there is a spirit inside of you that directs what you think and feel. And if there is spirit, it implies that there is a God. And this is something science knows is not true. So why does this admittedly somewhat strange topic of free will matter? It matters because it has an incredibly subtle and incredibly powerful influence on the world. And again, for me, this was never more evident than being in Wales. Perfectly decent people and friendly, no knowledge of God. And they have no opportunity because there's no diversity of thought. You can't even find out about it in what's supposed to be a place of learning like a bookstore. Brian Gale's grandson told us that people his age revere Dawkins. You can hardly go to one of his friends' house that don't have one of Dawkins' books. Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, has sold millions of copies and been translated into over 30 languages. So this his point of view and this determinist point of view we've talked about, again, is permeating society all over the world. Brian's grandson also said no one in his peer group believes in religion. And I couldn't help but think when we were over there, this is a preview of where the United States is going. People are worshiping at the altar of so-called knowledge and so-called science, proclaimed by false prophets like Dawkins and Hawkins, men who can be very convincing. Few people, very few, have the opportunity that we do to understand the truth. And again, how could they? They don't have access to it. What's more, few people consider the implications of these worldviews. So apart from whether or not you fall asleep during this message, the idea of determinism has some very dark implications. So think about it for a moment. What is a world like where people don't have choice? Einstein fully understood the implications. He said, quote, "I know that philosophically a murderer is not responsible for his actions," an inescapable conclusion of what he said and what he believed. To lighten the mood, Einstein said, "I know that philosophically a murderer is not responsible for his actions, but I'd still prefer not to have tea with him." Right? So Einstein is making light of the implications. In many respects, he was a very moral man too, but he was only moral because he ignored the implications of what he believed. The inescapable conclusion of evolution and of determinism, a world without free will, a world without choice, is that no one and nothing is of any intrinsic value, and since we don't have choice, there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. Richard Dawkins put it this way: "The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil and no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference." This is the man who, as Brian Grandson said, people are revering. His books are everywhere. He's considered to be a scientific authority. The implication is that you and I can't be held accountable for anything. We're not accountable for how the neurons in our brain are connected. Whether we care and feed for strangers or murder them is completely beyond our control. We have no choice, they say. The book that I picked up in Wales says people who disagree with this point of view disagree based on, quote, "the scientifically indefensible premise that we simply must have free will." So this is their belief, but they also, in some instances, understand the implication. The book I mentioned says we're nothing but machines, that choice is an illusion, but the author also acknowledges the following. He says, quote, "coldly conceding that we are brain machines and giving up the notion of personal responsibility will most likely remain too dangerous a move. So the fact that it's true is dangerous. Accepting it as being true is dangerous. Integrating it into how we live is dangerous. Quote, the destruction of our legal and cultural framework in the light of scientific revelations would take us somewhere we don't want to go. Somebody had the following semi-humorous quote to say about free will. He said, one of the annoying things about believing in free will and individual responsibility is the difficulty of finding someone else to blame your problems on. And when you do find somebody, it's remarkable how often his picture turns up on your driver's license. Sorry, give me a second here. So just to repeat that quote from the book I mentioned, the destruction of our legal and cultural framework in the light of scientific revelation would take us somewhere we don't want to go. And I would submit to you, we are already there. We're living in an age now where books like The God Delusion, God is Not Great, sell millions of copies. An age where a fraction of the people that read those books know anything about the Bible. And most of those don't know what it means to live truly in God's way. We're living in a world where killing an unborn baby is described as reproductive choice, which when you pay close attention to these words, like Hawking getting the Medal of Freedom and he doesn't believe in freedom, and they call it reproductive choice, but the people who promote this and provide the science for it don't believe in choice. They don't believe in free will, which is why it doesn't matter if you have an abortion or not. Brethren, we are living in a world exactly as the Bible predicted we would, when men lose all sense of God and His righteousness and truth. So what does the Bible say it will be life like to live in our day and age? Excuse me, in Jude 1, verse 17 through 18. Jude 1, verse 17, but you, beloved, remember the words which were spoken before by the apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ, how they told you that there would be mockers in the last time who would walk according to their ungodly lusts. So we have books like God is Not Great that mock God. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 through 4. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 through 4. But know this, that in the last days, grievous times will be upon us. And I'm reading from the literal. Verse 2, for men will be lovers of themselves, money lovers, braggarts, arrogant, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural feeling, unyielding, slanderers, without self-control, savage, haters of good. Verse 4, betrayers, reckless, puffed up, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And in verse 7, 2 Timothy 3, verse 7, always learning, but never able to come to a full knowledge of the truth. So when you really study evolution, it's interesting what you find. In fact, there are it's not publicized, there are a whole group of scientists who now recognize natural selection is not adequate to produce giraffe and horses and whales and dolphins. They realize Darwin was wrong. Interestingly, they realize it because of Francis Crick and the discovery of DNA. They know natural selection is completely insufficient to produce the diversity we see in the world. But rather, they consider that there could be a creator. They are ever learning, unable to come to a knowledge or a love of the truth. They have been subtly and powerfully seduced into believing a lie. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 9 through 10. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. Brethren, the knowledge of God's truth, the fellowship of His Spirit, the fellowship of church brethren, the understanding we have of the right way to go, the right type of choices to make on a daily basis. God's mercy, God's plan that we hear about on the Sabbath and the holy days, these are precious and rare and invaluable treasures. The point of today's message is to encourage us to hang on to them until the end, to resist the subtle and powerful influence of the devil, to be aware of his subtle devices, and to put on the whole armor of God so that we can stand in this evil day. Ephesians 6, verse 13 through 17 tells us to put on this armor. It tells us to have our waists girded with truth, to put on the breastplate of righteousness, to shod our feet with the gospel of peace, and above all, to take the shield of faith. And I can tell you, when you read all these books that I've read on evolution and determinism and Einstein and all these people, there are times when it takes some faith. But every single time I've been able to disprove their beliefs through science or the Bible or experience. That faith that we have is precious. We have that faith so that we can quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. As a final verse, let's reread Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your descendants may live. So, brethren, let us purposely, consistently, consciously exercise the gift of free will. Let us choose life. And it's something to take away to think about. The title of today's message was Free Will. My next message will be Free Won't.